WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. You can follow all the rules in America and still be unable to support your family. You can have a job, work hard, be thrifty, and stay poor. My guest, John Schwartz, has written a new book about such people. It's called The Forgotten Americans, 30 Million Working Poor in the Land of Opportunity. Schwartz says the nation's guiding beliefs and public policies are based on false assumptions about the relationship between poverty and work. Schwartz is a professor of political science at the University of Arizona. He told me who fits into the category of the working poor and what kinds of jobs they have.
Well, the working poor are in jobs across all sectors of the business and industrial economy and the service economy as well. The people whom I interviewed, the families, one was a manager of a department in a retail store, and his wife was the office manager in a for a warehouse. Another family, the head of the family was a medical research associate. Still another family, was a machinist. And another family was a janitor at a school, and his spouse was a social worker.
These people who are working full-time?
These people are working year-round full-time, yes.
But they're not making enough money to make ends meet.
That's correct. One of them, the goal for next year was to buy a bed. They had no money for a bed. They slept on a mattress on the floor. They had no living room furniture except for furniture that the church gave to them. Another person survived on baked and fried potatoes for several days running because they had to pay utility bills and didn't have money for food.
Most of the people you interviewed, were they married and were their spouses working too?
Yes. In the cases of the married couples, of whom we have two examples in the book, in both cases the spouse was working and mostly full-time.
How many children did most of these families have?
Two of the families had two children, and two of the families had three children.
I know one of the women who you interviewed, she had started selling blood to make ends meet. And then since she was having such trouble making ends meet on her job, she was thinking of going on welfare or selling drugs.
That's right. And when she started talking about this, she began to weep because her situation was so intolerable. The choices that she faced were so intolerable. She was working full-time with two children. She earned about $18,000 a year. She was unable to, her children had shoes that had holes in them. She was unable to replace the shoes. She knew people who were selling drugs and who were able to give their kids clothes and Christmas presents, things that she wasn't able to give her kids, and she worked year-round full-time. She sold blood to try to make money to make ends meet. It was a very moving situation.
What's changed within the population of people who we call the working poor?
Well, I think that the working poor have been with us for a long time, and we haven't noticed. It's grown worse in the last 20 years. I think that's true, but it's been a problem in the American economy and most economies in the West forever, really. So I don't know that the working poor have grown, but I think the stereotypes are wrong about the poor. Many of these people are, the vast majority are high school graduates. Many of them have a year or more of college. A million or more have a college degree. They simply don't, half of them are over age 30. In fact, really over age 35. They're experienced workers with educations. They simply don't fit the usual stereotype. And yet they're poor. They're struggling and unable to survive, really, as an average American.
You say the number of working poor has grown in the past 20 years. Do you know why?
Well, I think it's been a combination of things. Again, I repeat, because it's important to understand that this problem was around in the 1960s in large proportions. It's grown more since. But the reasons are that by the 70s, the swell of the baby boom generation had come into the job market, and the result was there was a labor surplus that made wages put a lid on wages, really, given the competition among workers. And then when that began to recede toward the early 80s, the policies of those years that created such enormous deficits that much of the more of the money in this country went to interest payments and less to wages. And the combination of those two have meant that wages have not increased, in fact, have declined in this country since 1973.
Do you think that most of the families who figure into the category of the working poor show up in the category of the poor? You know, if we looked at the official poverty statistics, people who fall under the official poverty line, would the working poor be included?
If we take year-round full-time workers and their families, there are 18 million of them who are poor, but only about 5 million of them fit into the poverty, the official poverty line statistics, so that there are actually three times more working poor who are year-round full-time workers than the official government figures tell us.
So what's the difference between how you're defining working poor and how the official statistics define poor?
Well, the official poverty line started off with a good idea. It was meant to measure the lowest, the ability to afford basic necessities at the lowest standard of living of an average family purchased at the lowest realistic cost. That is, you were unable to live at, as an average American, even at the lowest cost and with the lowest level of necessities.
And that doesn't...
Well...
Why is that inaccurate now?
The government started measuring that in one way, and then possibly without realizing the consequences, changed the measure with the result, early on, it did this in the late 1960s, with the result that today's poverty line, which is, if you earn have an income of $14,000 a year for a family of four, you are not in poverty. According to the official poverty line, in most areas of the country, that's ludicrously low. And everybody really, I think, almost everybody understands that.
You've reworked the poverty line. You've retabulated it so that it falls in line with the amount of money that you'd need today to maintain a minimum decent standard of living. What would that give you by your calculations?
Well, if we were to take a family of four, it would be approximately $22,000 a year now, which would mean the ability to feed the family minimally nutritiously, that's about $75 a week, the ability to afford what the Department of Housing calls a low-cost apartment, the ability to have one car that is driven 100,000 miles over 10 years at an intermediate-sized car at 15% below the average cost for that car, to spend a very modest amount on clothing, mostly secondhand clothing, and personal items and taxes, along with medical care, and that comes up to $22,000 in 1992. It was about, in 1989, it was about $19,600. And in 1990, about $20,600.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Schwartz. He's the co-author of the new book, The Forgotten Americans. It's about the working poor. He's also a professor at the University of Arizona. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. John Schwartz is my guest, the author of a new book about the working poor called The Forgotten Americans. You know, we hear a lot of talk about job training. And I wonder what you think of job training programs, if they're the answer in a period where there's actually a lot of unemployment. There might not be as many jobs as we think, but also some of the jobs that people are training for might be the kinds of jobs you're talking about, in which you could work full-time and still be poor.
I would say that's true for the large majority of people in job training programs, that the programs will be, even if the jobs are available, the programs will be training them for jobs that pay $5 and $6 an hour or $6.50 an hour, with the result that the families will still be poor and will be poor for the indefinite future. No workfare program or job training program I know of, even the successful ones, have dramatically changed the lives of more than a handful of the participants.
What are some of the recommendations that you have? Do you think we should be raising the minimum wage? Would that help?
Well, let me say in preface to that, that we've tried to look at the conventional solutions, solutions like job training, like education, other solutions like improving our manufacturing base, and solutions like improving the productivity of our industries, and also solutions like improving our economy and creating jobs. And just to give you one example as to why these solutions are ineffective, we added an economy almost the size of Germany to our own in the 1980s, and yet our working poverty is as big, in fact, even bigger today than it was before we added that economy. We added 17 million jobs. And working poverty continues to be a problem of serious magnitude. My point is that the conventional solutions have not worked for more than a minority of people who are working poor. This means there is a need for a more direct approach. And we propose a very modest increase in the minimum wage, coupled with a substantial increase for year-round full-time workers of what is known as the earned income tax credit. It is basically a kind of a wage subsidy through the tax system so that it creates no new bureaucracy. And it can lift working families who are responsible and productive. These people produce, make our flag, they make our clothes, they grow our food. They are responsible for much of the welfare in that is the happiness of our countrymen and women. It would lift these people to a minimally decent standard of living.
Now, how would that work exactly, the earned income tax credit you're describing?
Well, the way it is a program that already exists where when people who are working people earn less than a certain amount, once they paid their taxes, so to speak, if it turns out that they would get a credit, and if the credit is greater than their taxes, then they get that money from the government as a direct payment, and so it's a way of increasing, essentially increasing their earnings.
What would you think of a WPA type program in which jobs were created that paid a decent wage?
I think it would create a huge bureaucracy. A decent wage is a lot of money. We're not talking about $8,000 jobs here. We're talking about if people have families of three and four. We're talking about enabling families to have incomes of $15,000 to $22,000. So we're talking both about a huge bureaucracy and a huge public expenditure. The proposal we're talking about allows the private sector to do most of the job creation, and what the public sector does is simply to top off what the private sector isn't able to do on its own.
Bill Clinton has proposed reforming the welfare system so that people could be on welfare for a couple of years, but then they'd be required to take a job. Does that sound like a realistic proposal to you?
I think not until he recognizes the size of this problem and the fact that when you get somebody to, he also speaks about people, assuring people jobs that they will get above the official poverty line. I think in order to have something that is truly realistic and just, we have to have a definition of poverty that is realistic and just. And I think that Clinton's definition of poverty is way too low and is asking people to do something that not even Adam Smith, the creator of the Bible of the free market, the wealth of nations, not even Adam Smith would ask people to work year-round full-time or feel that it's fair without them being able to enjoy a minimally decent standard of living. And nobody who is working at minimum wage or just above and who are at about the poverty line has a minimally decent standard of living in this country unless they're in very isolated locales.
What about what President Bush has to say about welfare?
Well, President Bush's approach to welfare is, at least his public stances, are basically ones of punishment. Try to cut back where you can, require work, but don't think a lot about what these people are being paid or how well they're able to live and whether they're able to feed and give health care and clothe their families. The idea being that if you make welfare a harsh enough existence, then people will work. And of course, the problem with that situation, you do get people off the welfare rolls very possibly that way, at least to a small extent. But the problem is that the people remain poor.
Is America unique in having a lot of working poor when compared to other industrialized countries?
We are unique in not doing very much about it. Other countries have very few working poor, certainly in families with children, because economy leaves few working poor, but because government programs of one kind or another raise these people out of poverty. We simply have far lesser governmental effort to accomplish that in the United States, with the result that there are many more working poor in this country, including in families with children, than exist in most other countries.
John Schwartz is co-author of The Forgotten Americans, published by Norton. He's a professor of political science at the University of Arizona. This is Fresh Air.